Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Katie Hoogendam. Each week, we visit with a local author, editor, journalist, teacher, broadcaster, or someone otherwise involved with the world of words. We hope to find out a little about her life. What prompts her to write? Give her an opportunity to read some of her work for us. And we're very pleased to have Katie Hoogendam pay us another visit today. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
Meredith Katie Hoogendam is a writer, artist, and mother, with former incarnations including high school teacher and radio host. Though focused on parenting and homeschooling, she remains professionally and personally concerned with environmental issues and educational theory and practice. Spirituality, feminism, and identity are ongoing topics of interest for her. Her poetry, essays, and artwork have appeared in G's Magazine, Mutha Magazine, and Topology, among others, as well as two of Northumberland County's own Hill Spirits anthologies. Katie has just completed her first chapbook, Mother Tongue, a collection of poetry on motherhood, mourning, and identity, to be released on November the 2nd at a poetry party in Camborne, an event open to the public. So, Katie, I know many of our listeners will remember your very successful radio show, Carpe Noctem, which featured stories and poetry by local authors, as well as music with Murcutt. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing since you decided to leave broadcasting for a while.
Well, since leaving my show, I had a daughter, Juniper, who is now almost two. That was the primary reason I left in the first place. I didn't have enough breath to to really host my radio show anymore, being so pregnant. But I've had time to devote more time to my own writing. I'm currently homeschooling or unschooling my son. So doing that and also working with my husband's firm. So pretty full days.
Well, you've also been doing quite a lot of artwork, haven't you?
Here and there, when I can get into my basement lair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, when you were last here, I asked you what inspired you to write your poems. I guess we know the inspiration for your latest collection, which has just been published with some of your artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Did the art come first, or was it created to illustrate the poems?
Well, in this case for the chapbook, the art came first. The cover is actually a painting I had done probably about a decade ago, kind of a mythical half-raven, half-woman who is supposed to be my mother, and then six ravens in different styles of repose or flying away, which represent all six. She had six daughters. I have five sisters, so I'm the youngest. It's supposed to sort of be a sort of mythical representation of the dynamics of our sister relationship and our daughter relationship.
I wish our listeners could see it, because it's a very, very beautiful cover.
Thank you.
With the ravens against a lovely red background.
Mm-hmm.
And
So that came first. The art really did come first. And just there's a photograph of my mother giving birth to me in the back of the next to the last poem. When my mother was in labor with me, there were so many daughters that my sister's friend, who was a student at the University of Michigan, a photography student, they just told the doctors that she was another daughter. So my birth was actually her final senior seminar. She recorded it and took pictures of it, so I have some nice professional pictures of my birth, whether my mom wants that or not. I don't know, but yeah.
Well, it's unusual, I guess.
It is unusual for that time.
Yes. Yeah. So what was the impetus for this chapbook, and why the focus on motherhood and identity, as it has been described?
Yeah. My mom has been sick for some time, quite a while, with COPD, which is kind of like emphysema. And as a family, we've had several scares with her health over the few years, and kind of this could be the end moment. So those have left us all, like a lot of families with aging parents, sort of hyper-vigilant about her health. And now my dad's health too, and their mortality, really. So putting this chapbook together for me was a way to direct my grief and probably a way to feel some control over the situation. Poetry, I find, is a really great medium for that, for processing that which cannot be contained by words, because poetry allows you to move into a sort of mythical realm where analogy can actually substitute for reality.
Mm-hmm.
That was the work for me.
So outside of the themes of motherhood and identity, are there any central images or guiding motifs running through the collection?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll leave some for my readers to find. I never knew there was a word for that. I think I heard it a couple years ago on CBC. An author was talking about these Easter eggs, as they described them, that they put throughout their novels, like little bits of, you know, sort of surprise treasures that maybe longtime readers would notice and be able to find. I don't know if that's really the right term here, but but I like to, yeah, sort of leave that for folks to find. But there are some obvious ones like gardening and the wilderness and honeybees. It's something I've been thinking about a lot and something I wanted to build a collection around for a long time, which is sort of the seeming conflict between the domestic and the wild.
So what does the wild embrace? I mean, I was surprised when you said wild,
yeah,
as opposed to the world, for instance, or something, when you said domestic first, right?
Yeah. No, I definitely mean the wild. I've always really liked the thoughts of Carl Jung, like that idea. If you think back to sort of the traditional or the Grimm's fairy tales or, you know, any of those stories where the child is happy in the village and then one day she stands at the edge of the forest where she's forbidden to go. And, you know, her playmates are in the background playing a game, and then they say, don't go, you know, children have been, you know, once a child goes into the woods, they never come back, and there's all these horror stories about what happens, and then she has to make that decision, do I cross this line? Do I stay where I'm safe in the village with everything I know, with my parents and the security of this community, or do I venture out on my own into what I don't know? I've heard stories about it. It's supposed to be scary. I'm supposed to not be able to survive. But, you know, will she take that risk? Will she go with her curiosity? There's a wilderness inside of us, and there is a wilderness outside of us, too. So whatever we're willing to risk.
Okay. Well, how about reading to us now some of your poems?
Sure. So before I read a poem or two, I thought I would read my introduction to kind of give a little more context. And I call it the foreword, A Valediction Encouraging Morning. I start with a quote from a musician that I've loved for a long time, Tori Amos. Oh, these little earthquakes, doesn't take much to rip us into pieces. To mourn is not a singular event like an earthquake, or perhaps it is exactly like an earthquake. Mourning predictable according to geography, but not necessarily chronology. Loss catalyzing a personal tectonic shift with reverberations far beyond its epicenter. Mourning an event not unto itself, but rather a long protracted fractilic composition of metaphysical fissures. The cracks, then, as others have intoned, this is where the poetry comes in. I write poetry not because it's the thing I'm best at, it's not, but because poetry is what happens to me, and when it happens, I record it, and sometimes I share it. I started writing this chapbook a long time ago. My mom was diagnosed with a chronic disease years back, and I thought this chapbook was about her. It wasn't until I put nearly everything together that I realized this collection isn't really about my mom at all. It's about my experience of mourning the loss of my mother. In truth, I could never write an homage to or even a proper elegy for my mom. I cannot fit her onto the page. She has her share of faults, and like any daughter, all of them remain glaringly obvious to me. But others have called her a saint, Buddha-like, a wise woman, and they're not wrong. These poems, then, attempt to document my subjective and imperfect understanding of reality from the perspective of Sally's daughter, and, as things panned out, as a mother myself during the years and months of my mother's illness. Life in the 21st century Western world isn't built for grief. There's little sitting Shiva or communal howling, and we are the worse for the absence of these shared systems for processing the pain of loss. Poetry offers that needed space in which to howl. I'll take it. So I'll read the first poem. Triangulation. Twilight. The sky is thick with fireflies. Cross-legged on a gray stone in the seeming wild, an adult child hidden, forbidden smoking in my parents' field. The deer are grazing in the star thistles, mounds of warm brown mammal moving among the flowers. I have been here for hours. Drained of black coffee, the cup in my hand is bluebird blue. The sky will efface soon, giving way to the moon. Unless the moon is new, then all is indecipherable from night. Stone, deer, thistle, cup, everything hidden in plain sight. My mother isn't as beat up as we'd feared, but she's still dying. She's been dying all my life. Fear of her death brought me home early from slumber parties, cut short girl talk, stalked me, this grim reaper after her, through puberty and in back seats, through dark forest deep and down the wide aisle. Now I watch the smoke curl up and into the dusky sky, into oblivion. And though these things remain self-evident, we're all carrion. It seems to me a shovel in a hole in black dirt, these totem objects of my mother, the gardener, cannot mean anything like death. Death has nothing to do with them. A shovel, a hole, black dirt, these are for seeds to be buried in. My mother resurrected again and again in hyacinth, bougainvillea, delphinium. Flowers, roots, blossoms, kith, kindred, kin. Perennial mother, propagated on the wind, the honeybees will find her, suck her nectar in. She'll be pollen on their thighs, swollen with goldenrod, these she-bees triangulating on the fly, dressed down priestesses working on high, building empires, pink lady, northern spy, matriculating in the school for the wild. Worker bees, daughter bees, for queen mother alone, forming wax, hexagon, brood, and comb, always calculating internally their distance from home.
Thank you, Katie. I'm glad I asked you about the wild, because that was helpful in the poem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, are you going to read us another one?
Sure. I think I'll do this one, which I was unsure about putting in. I have a weird relationship with this poem, because sometimes I love it and sometimes I don't like it at all.
Okay.
But it seemed to make sense. It's called Mother, Farmer's, Alma, Auntie Up. Mother's waiting looked like negligence, a mirage, diamonds in the snow. In fact, it was patience, a blackjack summer cloaked in fangs and howls. In truth, she always did know when to sow and when to reap, although was afraid, I think, to hold them and also to fold them. Though clover, like lovers falling into one another, continued to spring forth unmaintained. Her cards, a mix of hearts and spades, one hand always in the dirt, waiting for something invisible to grow.
Thank you, Katie. Now we'll take a short break.